This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest. I'm Sharmila Ganesan and together with me is Lim Soo Ann. So for our story today, last week, Donald Trump announced that the US will be cutting all ties with the World Health Organization. And this includes no longer funding the global health body. But with the US being the largest funder of the WHO, we take a look at what impact this could have on global public health efforts, including, of course, the tackling of COVID-19.
And if you have any thoughts you would like to share with us, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can also WhatsApp us. The number is 018-789-8899. So the Trump's decision to cut ties with the World Health Organization was not completely unexpected. You know, we saw that he previously threatened to do so back on May 19th. And back then he tweeted a 4-page letter to the WHO in which he criticized the body for its early response to the coronavirus outbreak. And his letter actually ended with an ultimatum that the WHO will have to commit to quote-unquote major substantive improvements. And that has to be within the next 30 days or the US will pull out of the body and permanently stop funding it. But of course, he didn't clarify what these improvements should be, and the letter also included unsubstantiated claims that have since been rebuked by many health experts and medical journals.
So classic Trump, in other words.
Yes.
But besides this letter, Trump has been ramping up his criticisms against the WHO and China for their handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. So he's blamed the organization and its director general, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, for being quote-unquote China-centric and for allegedly promoting misinformation from Beijing. Trump has also accused the organization for severely mismanaging and covering up, his words, the threat of COVID-19. And this is despite the fact that the US only implemented measures to contain the pandemic much later than WHO's declaration of a public health emergency on January the 30th. And the thing that's unexpected about Trump's decision on Friday is that it has only been 10 days since that initial letter to the WHO. So there's still 3 weeks to go before the deadline that he has set for the organization. But he has already made the decision to withdraw the US from the body. And he said that, quote, "We have detailed the reforms that it must make and engage with them directly, but they have refused to act because they have failed to make the requested and greatly needed reforms."
And of course, all of this is done on his Twitter account, yes, as he usually does. Mm-hmm. And this is also not the first time that Trump has done something like this, right? That he has pulled the US out of international agreements. And, you know, this has included in the past the Paris Climate Agreement, UNESCO, mm-hmm, and even the UN Human Rights Council. And in the case of the WHO, interestingly, the US is actually the only member state that can legally withdraw from the organization. And that's because that's a privilege that the country had insisted on before they joined the organization back in 1948.
Right.
And of course, this highly controversial move has drawn criticisms not only within the US, but from without as well, especially because the US is the largest single funder of the WHO. And really, we can't forget that right now we are still in the midst of fighting the COVID-19 pandemic. And even the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, said that now is not the time to cut funds to the WHO and that the international community should be working together to stop the virus.
So for a better understanding of the possible repercussions and the changes that the WHO will now need to make to its funding system, we have on the line with us public policy specialist, Dr. Kaur Swee King. So thank you for joining us, Dr. Kaur. And before we dive into the repercussions of President Trump's move, perhaps you could help us out by putting things into perspective and explain how the WHO is funded.
Sure, of course. The World Health Organization is one of about 30 or so specialized agencies of the United Nations. And in general terms, the World Health Organization, or WHO, is funded exactly like how the UN system and UN agencies are funded, through two main ways. The first way is something called an assessed contribution. This means that every country in the world, rated for their population and economic growth, will have to pay a certain sum into the World Health Organization and the United Nations agencies. Malaysia also pays an assessed contribution to the World Health Organization and the United Nations agencies in the form of an assessed contribution. The second way is something called the voluntary contributions. And over here, these are, shall we say, additional funds that are provided by national governments such as the United States or Germany or even Kuwait, or also the multilaterals and non-profits and philanthropies of the world. For example, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation provides about 12% of the World Health Organization's funding through the form of voluntary contributions.
And how does the WHO use these funds?
The largest area of health, or the largest health program that the World Health Organization runs, is polio eradication. Approximately 26% of the funds of the World Health Organization goes towards the program area of polio. The second area that the World Health Organization spends a lot of money on is increasing access to health and nutrition services. Mm-hmm. And this is a broad category, meaning they will provide, say, technical assistance, and they'll provide a mutual aid to ensure that people receive health services in the form of hospitals and clinics, and also nutrition in association together with the World Food Programme. The third largest area that the World Health Organization spends money on is on vaccine-preventable diseases. So if you look at the top three, two of them are vaccines in terms of polio as well as other vaccine-preventable diseases. And this gives you an idea of about the priorities of the World Health Organization.
So then if we look at our current global situation with the COVID-19 pandemic, what has been the role of the WHO in this fight against COVID?
The World Health Organization plays one important role in managing COVID, and that is to coordinate the response of the world. The World Health Organization does not have hospitals, nor do they directly implement or deliver healthcare. So they perform a few important services, for example, setting standards, number two, coordinating responses, and number three, providing technical assistance to countries, usually in, say, the emerging world, like sub-Saharan African countries, where they need technical assistance of how to run their programs. It's in the setting standards and the coordinating of responses during COVID that the World Health Organization is important. However, fortunately for us, there are also multiple other actors that are in charge of, shall we say, the vaccine research process, also the healthcare delivery process, which the WHO coordinates but does not directly manage. So what is the impact of WHO in terms of COVID responses? It will be to coordinate the responses for the rest of the world, although not directly involved in these responses.
So now with the news that the US is going to pull out of the WHO and the fact that it is the largest contributor to the body, what impact could this have on WHO's work in the short term?
Firstly, in technical terms, the World Health Organization would suddenly lose about $450 million of funding per year from the United States. The World Health Organization budgets are arranged in biennials, meaning every 2 years they have a new budget. The U.S. contributes $900 million in 2020 to 2021 in the 2 years of this current budget. So that shortfall will have to be met for the World Health Organization to continue funding itself and its operations. And that is approximately 15% of the total budget of the World Health Organization. And that's quite a lot of money. Mm. And they could meet this, for example, by increasing funds, for hopefully from the Gates Foundation or other philanthropies, or maybe even from national governments that are also stepping up to provide additional funding, such as China. So that's the first impact. The second impact of the US pulling up in the short term could be political. Political in the sense that the World Health Organization would exist and be functional and effective if other countries in the world believe in the system. But if a nationalist government, such as the United States, were to pull out and other nationalist governments were to pull out, it could lead to a domino effect, where people pull out funding from the United Nations agencies and multilateral agencies because they don't believe in global collaboration during a time when we actually need more global collaboration during this pandemic.
Mm. And what long-term ramifications do you foresee?
The long term, it could be that the United States pullout would mean that we have a less global collaboration in terms of vaccine development, in terms of vaccine manufacturing and medicines manufacturing, also the distribution of it. This is mitigated by the fact that the United States government does not represent the United States in total, because the United States is a large entity, a country that has philanthropies like the Gates Foundation and the Bloomberg Philanthropies. It also has multiple research universities like Hopkins and Harvard. It also has multiple pharmaceutical companies like, for example, just inventing Pfizer and MSD. And these other entities may continue collaborating with the World Health Organization or the multilateral order. So I hope that although President Trump has announced the pullout, that other parts of the United States will remain within the global order.
Mm. So then keeping these repercussions in mind, you know, if we look at the funding system of the WHO, what are the shortcomings that have been exposed by this move and will then need to be addressed immediately?
In the very short term, I think that the donor funding will probably have to be increased quite dramatically. And this is done by a lot of agencies. For example, the Gates Foundation is only doing COVID responses at the moment and putting a lot of their projects on the back burner. Other philanthropies will need to step up as well. For example, Wellcome Trust, the Bloomberg Philanthropies are stepping up. We also have governments in Europe stepping up to meet the breach. For example, the governments of Sweden, Norway and the UK, together with the European Commission, are stepping up in order to meet the short-term funding gaps. But in the long term, about how the World Health Organization is funded, maybe I'll give one fact at the moment. The World Health Organization is the seventh largest spender in the United Nations. Mm-hmm. The first few spenders are things like peacekeeping operations, UNICEF or children's operations, World Food Program, the Development Program, and the High Commissioner for Refugees. To help the World Health Organization, you need to reform, or we need to reform, how the entire United Nations agencies and system is funded. The first one is to make it more predictable. Right now, the United Nations will have to go cap in hand every one to two years to national governments and beg them for money. And begging is a good word and a very accurate word, because even though it is in international law for governments to pay their assessed contribution, many countries do not pay for a combination of reasons. Sometimes it's lack of economic growth and poverty. Sometimes they don't believe in a multilateral system. Mm. So to make it more predictable would require some reforms of international law, as well as proper involvement of national governments, philanthropies and actors in the global health and global development stage. I'm not pretending this is easy. Mm. But I'm saying that this long-term reforms in the way it is funded is necessary. The second element that I might bring in is actually to more formally engage non-state actors. The United Nations was formed in the 1940s, mostly to gather the states of the world. However, we see that the global economy, all $80 trillion of the global economy, is dominated by non-state actors, such as private companies or multinationals, for example, Google and Facebook and Big Tech is one example. So the size of private companies means that they have to be, in a way, brought into the global order so that they can appropriately fund it as well. Secondly, the rise of philanthropies. The Gates Foundation sits on an endowment of about $48 billion. That is approximately 8 times the size of Malaysia's health budget per year. And that's just the endowment of the Gates Foundation, not their annual operating costs. So philanthropies will have to be tied into the global system in a way that is meaningful, and in a way also that respects the sovereignty of nation states around the world. And those are the two ways. I don't pretend that they are easy, and this will require a lot of politics, geopolitics and maneuvering, especially to convince nation states that reforms are necessary for their own protection.
Mm. So then are you optimistic that these reforms can be put in place in the short term?
Well, I am idealistic in the long term, this is true, because without idealism in the long term of about 20 to 30 years, we will not be able to have hope to change the future. But in the short term, I'm relentlessly pragmatic and realistic. So there are small steps that can be taken in the extreme short term to build trust and to build the relationships that are necessary to break the cycle to end. We need a very strong international order, global order, for us to fight this species-wide problem like pandemics that we're going through right now, and in future, it will come very soon, if it's not here already, climate change. So that's more on the philosophical side. So I offer these two thoughts. Use COVID as a crisis that can be used to mobilize additional funds from a vast variety of actors. But secondly, use these funds not to build something for COVID, but to build a system that can survive past COVID. That's how we can be, shall we say, a little bit more strategic, but also quite pragmatic and realistic about what the situation we have today.
All right. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us, Dr. Kaur. So you just heard there from public policy specialist Dr. Kaur Swee King, who was talking to us about the impact of the US severing ties with the WHO. And then he was also talking about how this could affect not only the fight against COVID-19, but it could make it more difficult for the WHO to fund other public health needs due to the lack of funds. And this is because the US is the single largest contributor to the organization.
I do like the positive note that Dr. Kaur ended on, though, which that this could perhaps be an opportunity for a restructuring within the UN itself and the WHO, of course. That idea of including in the fold these multinational corporations that often have larger larger profits than some countries' GDPs.
That's right, yeah. And we can't just ignore them, right? Because these MNCs are so huge. They're everywhere in our lives. And it wouldn't make sense to not include them when we're talking about issues that are affecting every single country in the world. And now looking at the pandemic, we want to find, you know, when dealing with pandemics like this, you want to find innovative solutions, and these companies might be able to offer them.
And perhaps I'm just thinking, I have issues with the Trump administration in other ways as well. I think this is perhaps also another wake-up call for the rest of us that the over-reliance on the United States and their international policies is perhaps starting to show the holes. And it's time that we figured out how to address those issues rather than continue relying on them in the long term. So I found, speaking to Dr. Kaur immensely illuminating. That's all the time we have for today. If you have thoughts that you'd like to share with us, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can look us up on Facebook. We are BFM The Bigger Picture. And if you've missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcasts at bfm.my/dailydigest on the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Earth Matters, Juliet Jacobs, in conjunction with World Oceans Day, that's happening on the 8th of June, will be discussing how to build an ocean economy that's both stronger and more sustainable after COVID-19 with Fairul Ismail Jamal Hisni, the Vice Chairperson and Co-Founder of Meriset, and Lau Chai Ming, a Program Manager at Reef Check Malaysia. So that's all from me and Suan today, but do stay tuned, and we'll leave you now with Think Twice Before You Go by John Lee Hooker on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.